Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
you this name, the Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today my interview is with Mr. Marcus Lee. Mr. Marcus Lee has a podcast show, and he's on Podteep Television. He's going to tell you about why he started his show, a little bit of his background, and let you know some interesting things about the people he's interviewed and some of the topics he's covered. I'm also going to ask him about his input on what's going on in Israel. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How about yourself? A lot of the things going on in the world, but I'm doing good.
All right. Yeah, a lot of things are going on in the world. So tell the people who will listen to this interview later on, what are some of the things that you have, some of the reasons you started your podcast, your television show?
Well, I started it when my friends Nick and Kim approached me. I was actually coming on their show on a regular basis as just a guest and everything. So I would come on their new show. They actually started during the pandemic, and Nick is a lawyer by trade, a pension attorney, and Kim is an engineer by trade, but they had seen a lot of conversations around COVID and the pandemic, and they had already worked on shows where they had been interviewing business executives and things along those lines. But sometimes when they would try to get the shows on primetime network, they would get offers to have them at late hours or at other hours, so they were not getting the traction that they would like to get, so they decided to create their own. And I heard you talking to your audience about the background and everything, and it kind of resonated with me because when I was a preteen or maybe around the teenage years, yeah, I would have been 14 or something like that, my parents in rural North Carolina decided to start a radio station for much the similar reason. They were wanting to talk about things in the African-American community, hear about jazz music, hear about a number of other things. So they were not hearing that, and some of the stations that had been doing that were off the air. So they created a station when I was a teenager, and it was on for about 12 years. And I'd already had an interest in journalism and media. So with all of that coming together is part of the reason that I got involved with Pod TV. So like I said, I'm now pretty much their program director, but they had allowed me to get involved with them and to stay involved with them. So it was a very fun involvement, like I said, first as a guest, and then they offered me a show. I think it was called The Radio Show with Mark Lee, which I still have because they recognize that I have a radio-style voice and everything, so they offered me that show, and then afterwards I created the online dinner party, also created Mullins Music and Memories, but that isn't as active as it used to be, and all along those lines. So it was just some very fascinating conversations, and now I said I've pretty much produced several other friends' shows, everybody from Pam Purefoy that talks about politics and entertainment and culture to Barbara Smith that is a business coach to my friend Jatovi who is doing a show on gaming that's on hiatus, but it'll be back probably in 2024 to some people that are doing shows on chess to a couple of shows that are doing shows on investments and a number of other topics. So there have been a whole host of the shows. As a matter of fact, part of the reason of being a little bit late is I was hearing from Coco McMillan, and I produce her shows on Thursdays, and she is the former background vocalist for Gerald Levert when Gerald Levert was living, and she knows a lot of gospel people and all in that space. As a matter of fact, I think it was about 3 weeks ago she interviewed Melba Moore, and she's also interviewed the lady that sang As We Lay, Shirley Murdoch, and a number of other famous folks like that. So definitely she's had some tremendous guests, and it's been a pleasure to help her produce that show, just like it's been a pleasure to help another young lady, Cindy Bertram, produce a show around the cruise industry and travel. And then Jeanette Chesworth does one on Fridays around interior designing and having some positive energy in your house with what you have in the house in terms of decorations and in terms of the way that you structure your house and all in that space. So, like I said, there are a number of shows that Pod TV has. Some of them were recruited by me. Some were recruited by other people and all in that space. But it's a network, just like any other network. It has a host of shows. I think last count it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 40, somewhere between 35 and 40 or 45. And some of them have gone, you know, they've not worked out or they've had schedule conflicts. So, like I said, I mentioned Toby, who's on hiatus, but I know he'll be coming back. We used to have the gentleman, Lamar Odom. He had a show for a minute, and he is, of course, a former NBA star, and Grayson Marshall, who is a former NFL star, but their schedules got away, so right now they are not on the network. So it's like any other network. Shows come and go, and you have to see who's committed and wanted to stay involved in all in that space, but it's definitely an existing network, and it kind of comes from that full circle of seeing my parents do it in the mid-70s, and it lasted for about 12 years, and now Pi TV has been on for roughly about 3 or 4 years. So I know it's definitely been on pretty much during the entirety of the pandemic and everything. So definitely it's been interesting watching its growth. There's even a store now. So you can buy Pi TV cups if you go to PiTV.tv and all in that space. And eventually they'll connect it so that people can buy books of some of our folks that have been famous that have been on there. Because I know on our economic show, Bill Denko, who wrote The Millionaire Next Door, has been on that show and is actually hosted by David Walker. And David Walker was one of the, he's got a couple of things that he's famous for. Lately, he's part of the No Labels movement to try to get a third party candidate. And before that, he was the Comptroller General, I believe, under both Obama and under one of the Bushes or some of the like that. I know it was under both Republican and Democratic leadership, but he's definitely been in that space of being a world famous economist under both the Republican and Democrats.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Sounds like a great network I'm going to be a part of.
You're definitely going to be part of it. We're looking forward to having your show on that on a regular basis. I know a lot of what you do is audio, and a number of the shows that we have, we convert them to Spreaker, and then they go audio as well. But a lot of the shows are, as I said, it's a live stream network. So the majority of the shows are both TV and radio and all in that space. So I do know that we're on Roku. Folks can see Pod TV live on Roku. They can also go to PodTV.tv and see the three channels that we maintain. So we maintain the regular live channel, which is things that are going on most of the times of the show's scheduled designation. So, for example, Barbara Smith was on earlier today because she's always Thursday at 12. And then right after her is Wall Street Hacker, which is Peter Bennett talking about Wall Street as he used to be on Wall Street. So he literally was a Wall Street analyst and all in that space. So he had that knowledge. And then later on this evening, like I said, Coco will be on. Billy Graham will be a recording today, but he comes on and talks business coaching. And there are a number of other shows that exist on Thursdays and all in that space. So they can go to PodTV.tv and see some of the past shows as well as watching them live when they are scheduled to go live and all in that space. But we do have them through Spreaker going into audio format as well.
Yes, I'm already on Spreaker.
Mm-hmm.
I Heart Radio also, but I want to be a part of this network too.
Yeah, definitely. We're looking forward to having you. You are a great guest. And like I said, I'm always finding interesting guests. Sometimes I use services like Podcast Guest, RTIR. We send you a newsletter about different folks that you can be on a guest. And recently, even StreamYard has created a kind of a pool of people that you can ask them to be on the show as they are now trying to find guests for you as well. So there are a couple of sources. And then, of course, I have my own personal network of people. So I've had the pleasure of interviewing some amazing people, like just recently on the online dinner party I had, of all things, a woman that is a business coach. And then I also had some people that were definitely involved in other things, including a person that's in erotic and horror writing. So we just, on the online dinner party, had conversations about a number of things. It's like if you invited somebody to your house, if you lived in a house and you invited them over for dinner, you never know where the conversation may go or what might happen at the dinner party. So that's the way I think of the dinner party, is I invite a variety of people on Wednesday afternoons and let the conversation go where the conversation may. I mean, of course, the outlets that I use, like Podcast Guests, give you some question ideas, and I may use them as a crutch, but I don't use them totally and everything. So I do try to find different things to talk about while talking to my guests.
Yes, sir. Mr. Marcus Lee.
Mm-hmm.
What is your point of view about what's going on in Israel and Benghazi and all those things?
We talk about that on World Edition. I have my own personal views. I definitely am a fan of the two-state solution. I think that there are, like in a lot of issues, I think that there are terrorists on both sides. I thought that it was an atrocity and that Hamas definitely needed to be rooted out and all in that space. So the fact that they are being targeted, I do not think that that is a wrong thing, but I also know that Israel has, when it was created, was coming onto Palestinian or land where there were people already there and everything. So I think that there should be a peaceful solution, but I do think that there are, in my opinion, and not everybody agrees with me, I know that one of my fellow panelists is of the opinion that there can never be a two-state solution. So Sasha is a Ukrainian Jew, but I know others that are on the show that agree with me that we can't have a two-state solution, and if you can have peace even in that region, it's not been peace even if you want to go by biblical times and all in that way. But one of my favorite songs, and some people say it was a slightly communistic or socialistic song, but as a youngster I used to love hearing Imagine, and Imagine was about imagining the world, and some one of the lines is imagine a world with no religion. That's why some people have a problem with what John Lennon was singing, but I think he was personally just saying not having a world of religious intolerance and things along those space. I think I don't necessarily think the song was about eradicating religion. I think he was really more about not having religious intolerance, and there can be a lot of religious intolerance. I'm not a big fan of anti-Semitism, and I think that the folks that are attacking the Jewish population are wrong, but I'm also not a big fan of Islamophobia. So I think that both of those are wrong, and I think that there are people that are practicing both in that space. So that's just my own personal opinion. I think that, you know, if you're going after a target, why do you have to bomb innocent people and all in that space? Because they did do some very heavy bombing and all in that space. And I get that you want to get Hamas, but Hamas is limited individuals. It's not all of the people of Gaza or even Palestine. You know, it's like anything else. But not everybody in the African-American community thinks one way, but you would have people think that we think one way. But we are not a monolith. There are literally black Republicans, just like there are black Jews even. As a matter of fact, I did a lecture recently because of the cultural center I work at, and they actually were members of the Black Hebrew group that came up from Florida, and definitely a lot of them practice some of the Jewish faith and some of the Jewish beliefs, but they also claim that they are the lost tribe. And since, I don't know about you, Angela, but I wasn't around several thousand years ago, at least not around in the sense of being aware of it, because if you believe and think about ancestry and reincarnation, maybe I was around, but I don't have any memory of it. And that being said, I don't know what was happening in that time and place, but there are some people, even in the Black Jewish community, they would claim that they are the lost tribe and not necessarily the Jewish people that live in Israel now. And since I wasn't around several thousand years ago, at least not around that I am able to point to and say that that was me and everything, I can't really state whether they are right or wrong. So one of the things that I do with my guests, and you may find this interesting, is that I don't always agree with my guests, because I had a guest on. It was actually one of my most popular shows, but it was a gentleman that believed in a lot of conspiracy theories and all along those lines. So he actually had some thoughts around the government and a number of other things in that space. And while he might have said some things that made sense to me, he probably also said some things that didn't make sense to me, but I was not going to judge him. A lot of times when I have my guests on, I like to hear their viewpoints and just hear what they've got to say and give them an opportunity to share their viewpoints with the audience that we have. I'm not going to try to attack them for their viewpoints. So I just like to have people that are engaging in conversation and are interested in having fun and interesting conversations.
All right. Yes, sir. I heard that part. Mm-hmm. So my question is, do you think America is doing the right thing?
In what sense? I mean, they're
going to Benghazi, Pakistan. Do you think the Biden administration is doing the right thing?
I mean, it's like any other thing in politics. Sometimes they might be doing some good things, but they might be doing some bad things as well. I look at the overall picture and everything. I know that right now there are a lot of people that are speculating that both Biden and Trump are too old to run the country and all in that space, because Trump is only 3 years younger than Mr. Biden and all in that space. I think just like I think Obama made some mistakes at all, because I know some people that were thinking that Obama would solve all the problems because he was our first minority president and he was a activist, and I come out of that activism community as well, but I'm also realistic, so I know that you can't know what you're getting into until you get into it. So there are some decisions even he made, I mean, in Obama with drones, that I don't necessarily approve of and think that they were the right decision, but it was the decision he felt was right and all in that space. And there are a number of issues, including giving money, because there's a lot of money that is being spent, whether it is us supporting Israel, which is an ally, or us supporting Ukraine, which is an ally, but I believe if I remember correctly, you're in the Texas area, and we know that even here in North Carolina, there's a lot of homelessness and there's a lot of other issues that we need to address at home. So I sometimes think that we are spending too much time addressing issues that are outside of our realm. But I also know that sometimes we can be an ally in making change, because I was definitely glad to be part of embargoes and everything, even when apartheid was going on. And eventually we did force that government to change control and to get out of the apartheid system. So I think that government can play a role in terms of helping people, but I also don't know that we need to be pouring thousands of dollars into supposed allies and all in that space, because, you know, sometimes your allies can also turn against you. Because if you remember Noriega and those people down in Latin America were our allies, and even Hamas and some of the people on the 9/11 attack, we actually trained them. So we actually trained them at our military bases. So you never know what somebody will do with your allyship. I would even say that that's the case in business dealings and in the real world as well. Because I'm sure that you know people that you have been in relationships with that were very much your allies and your friends when the relationship started, but then they might have done some backstabbing or some other stuff and all in that space. Because one of my other favorite songs is the OJ's Backstabber, and I think we've all run across folks that have done that as well. So you have to be cautious even in the world politics to see why your allies are your allies and why they are serving as allies. But I also know that other cliche about keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. So there's that knowledge as well and everything. So there's a lot of things that play even in our world politics. But I'm not going to dismiss somebody because he's 80. For one thing, there's a lot of talk about his cognitive ability, meaning Mr. Biden. But, you know, Trump has had a couple of stumbles too, and Trump has said some very stupid things as well. So I think we can just do a lot of change in leadership. And I do get frustrated when I see the extremists that are the ones that get the most news and everything. And while I do not think that she is nearly as extreme as the MAGA people, I would say that probably the squad is a little bit more to the left than the average Democrat. And there's no doubt that the MAGA people are much further to the right than the average Republicans. But those are the ones that get the news attention and all in that space. So I actually think that moderation and working across the aisle and working together is always a good thing to do, whether we're talking race relations, whether we're talking sports, whether we're talking a number of other things as well. So I do believe in the power of unity and also the power of working together, even with folks that you may not agree with.
All right. So I understand what you said about Israel and Pakistan and Benghazi and all those things. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion of coronavirus? Do you believe that coronavirus was man-made?
I think there's a couple of things with the pandemic. I definitely think that it had some things that were going on in the way that it was handled. I think a lot of things happened in labs and in that space. I don't think it was necessarily intentional, but you also got to remember, I came out of the era of AIDS, and AIDS definitely came up during that time as well. So is it possible that some of the things came out of the pandemic that were not intentional? It is quite possible, but I'm not ready until I see concrete proof to put it into the government mindset or even the mindset of the pharmaceuticals and all in that space. I do think there was a rush, and you got to remember, I live in North Carolina, which is a pharmaceutical capital, to get the vaccine out there because they have to make a profit, and I don't blame pharmaceutical companies for making a profit and all, but sometimes they will rush things out that may not necessarily be needed as quickly as all of that. I mean, even if you want to think about our young people, and I can't remember if you have young people or not, I know I don't, but I have two nephews, and a lot of our kids are on Ritalin and all in that space, because that is something that is perceived to make them better, but it's also making a whole lot of money for the pharmaceutical company. So I'm not saying that we don't have kids that are in need of medication, because we probably do, but there are also some kids that are probably being over-medicated and all in that space. So that's one of the things I try to do, is study why the doctor is giving people the medicines. If they're giving them medicines and if they are needed, then definitely use them. I mean, I've got relatives that have serious medical health issues, and they have to use those medicines to put those issues under control, whether it's MS or whether it's cancers or a number of other things, even skin care and all of that. So I don't mind people using medicine for the right reasons, but I also think that you have to be cautious and do your due diligence in terms of researching, because not everything that is prescribed is necessarily needed.
All right, I agree with that. I agree with that, and the over-medication part, and I agree that medicine is still needed. I have some other questions to ask you.
Yeah, no problem.
So we talked about the coronavirus. We've talked a while about the wars and things in your podcast and the things that you have done and what type of network you have, and it's on iPod, television. One of my next questions would have to be, why? No, the word isn't why. The word would be, what? How do you feel about the killings here in America of black men and women? I mean, it's a touchy subject. It's a sore point, but it's scary anyway. Do you think a lot of these killings are deliberate, or that the police were in the right? I mean, because a lot of these things deliberate to me, the killings do. And the incarceration system, how do you feel about the criminal justice system and reparations?
Well, a couple of things. One, with the criminal justice system, it is a known fact that the criminal justice system is not fair. I mean, it is definitely biased toward one group or another, and a lot of times it has to do with both race but also class and everything. So if you have a certain amount of money, you can afford the better lawyers, and sometimes the justice system will be a little bit blind. So they say justice is blind, but they didn't say that it was always blind in the right way and all in that space. So, yeah, definitely all you got to do is go to any prison. I mean, all you can do is go to any prison, and you can see that there is changes that are going on that need to be addressed and all in that space. I mean, literally in downtown Durham, we have a prison that is right in downtown, and I can guarantee that the majority of that population is probably African-American. And, yes, I do think that there are some people that practice hate crimes and are selectively targeting people in both the black and brown communities and all along those lines. So you just have to be diligent in what you are doing and all along those lines. But definitely that is something else that is going on. Reparations, I know that's what you were asking. I know that we're winding down and everything. Reparations is something that I think sounds good in theory, and it would be wonderful if we could all get a check for the injustices of slavery, but I'm just personally not sure how it would be addressed and how we would determine who gets the reparations. Because, I mean, even if you look at the Native American population, there are a number of people that can claim to be Native American, but when you look at them, they don't look Native American. And, I mean, would it be that one-tenth of a percent rule or that one-fifth of a man rule, or how would we determine who is able to get it, and how do you prove that your ancestors were directly connected to slavery? So that is the issue that I have with reparations, is trying to figure out how it can be done. But definitely I've seen even things like Asheville, where they have given reparations, sometimes it's even given opportunities for grants and everything. So it would just be interesting to see how it would play out.
I personally don't believe that black people can get reparations, even though everybody else has received reparations, that the American government has harmed. The Japanese got reparations. I mean, just a lot of groups and nationalities and countries have received reparations, but black people have not. And I don't think black people will. I wish I thought differently, because the United Nations did say they owed American black people reparations, but I haven't seen any movement towards it.
Like,
in my understanding, Mr. Biden and Mr. Obama decided that there would be no reparations. They were not going to do anything monetarily for black people. And like you said, it would be nice if everybody could get a check for the discrimination they have been through, but I don't see it happening. I don't see that happening anytime soon, not in my lifetime.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It'd be hard to prove, because, like I said, the blonde chick that doesn't really have that much of a background to the African-American community could probably claim that she wanted to get reparations because she was distantly related and everything. So that's why I'm saying that I don't know how they would maintain the proof and how they would get the proof, because everybody can make those claims and everything. And like I said, there have been states, I want to say California has done something in the reparations state, as has North Carolina as has some other states. And I'd heard at one point that they were even, as a matter of fact, I think Biden, if I remember correctly, had put together a commission exploring reparations. So I can't say that they have totally dismissed the idea, because I won't say that that was under the current administration, where they have a task force that is doing research into whether it is going to be needed or how it could be done. So I do know that I'd heard that there was a federal task force that was doing an investigation into the possibility. So I don't think that it's 100% out of the realm of possibility.
I did not know that. I did not know President Biden and Ms. Kamala Harris was doing that, had a exploratory committee to explore giving reparations to the Black Americans. I did not know that.
Yeah, I think that that's been out there. And actually, I just saw an article recently where Kamala Harris was saying that she would, of course, inform the American public if there was a problem with Biden, because there are some people that are concerned that she would be number two and not everybody is ready for a Black woman president. And they would have no problem with that if she's got the ability to do it and she's got the skill set to do it. I haven't been overly impressed with the way she's done around migration, even though that was supposed to be one of her issues and everything. And I do know that there were some things that were done in even the criminal justice lane when she was in California that were problematic and that I don't know that she handled the way that I would have liked and everything. So it'll be interesting to see, one, if she stays number two, and two, if she was to do as she just said and inform the people should he get sick. And even on that other side, you know, there's been people that have been floating both this election and last election using Pete Buttigieg as a presidential candidate. But I'm also not sure that the American public is ready for a gay man, particularly a gay man with a husband, to be the leader of their country and all in that space. I mean, I would have no problem with it if he can do the job, but then there are some people in the Deep South and other places that would really find that to be distasteful in their mindset. But like I said, I'm looking for the qualifications of the person.
All right, okay. I know the last time I looked into reparations, it was when the United Nations had ruled about 2 or 3 years ago that Black Americans should get reparations. If that happens, my opinion is it should be in the millions for every Black American citizen. And for a slave, I can definitely prove that my granddad, Tully Taylor, was a slave.
Right. And there are a number of people who can prove that. I mean, but then, like I said earlier, the question would be, well, you could prove that your grandmother or your granddad was a slave. Could not the descendants of Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson prove that in that affair that they were the product of that affair? And all along those lines, because I think there was at least one kid, if not a couple of kids, from that affair, if I remember my history correctly. And if that's the case, there might be a woman that looks like Taylor Swift out there that could claim that she's a descendant of slavery and that could therefore get reparations. And, you know, there's a lot of people in our society that would have a problem with that if they saw a Miley Cyrus or a Taylor Swift getting money when they have a certain look and everything that does not fit the slave narrative.
Well, you think, in your opinion, people have to look Black.
Well, I'm just saying, no, they don't have to look Black, but that's why I use the Native American example, because there is a lot of people that are claimed to be Native Americans, because Native Americans get a certain amount of rights and a certain amount of ability in certain tribes and everything. But there is also a known fact that there is fraud in those situations, because there are people that claim to be Indian that might have only, or Native American, that might have only like 2% of the bloodline that is Native American, or maybe even less than 2%, but they are able to maneuver the system in such a way that they can get some of the benefits, because different people have different rules. That's what I'm saying. What I would need to understand the rules. But no, you don't have to look African American. Like what I said earlier, we are a very non-monolithic group. There are people that look very light, like I do, that are African American. There are people that look very dark, significantly dark. So we cover the spectrum. And I've got, even in my own family, I've got cousins. I've got cousins that are redheaded. I've got cousins that are redheaded and freckles, and then I've got cousins that are much darker complexion. So I've definitely got the rainbow in my own family. So when I come to particularly the big family reunions, there is a entire rainbow coalition and everything. And I wish that society was approving more of that as well. I was on another podcast yesterday, and one of the things I brought up, and I brought it up on a couple of shows, is I get frustrated with the fact that we're, what, getting ready to go into 2024, and they still say that one of the most segregated hours that exists is Sunday morning before 12 o'clock, because a lot of our churches are still structured in such a way that they are only predominantly black or predominantly white. And like I said, I know that the church that my – I'm not all that active in church, but the church that my brother goes to is very – integrated, and even the cultural center that I work at, Christ Central, used to be very integrated, even though when they first started, it was pretty much a white leadership, even though as they grew and eventually moved from the HI, the leadership became more diverse as well. So I definitely believe in diversity, even in our church groups and in leadership in general, but not everybody has those belief systems.
So I don't think in my lifetime I'm going to be alive to see the day where there's not hardly any discrimination, not in my lifetime.
No,
I'm 52 years old, so I don't see discrimination leaving in my lifetime, maybe in my great-great-grandchildren's lifetime. Because it's taught, racism is taught.
Yeah, and discrimination and bias has been around forever. I mean, weren't the you know, some people would argue, and I'm not saying that they were right, that there was discrimination between the Jews and the Gentiles. There was discrimination in biblical times, and I'm sure maybe you want to go all the way back down to the caveman era, that, you know, the caveman from one part of the caves may not have liked the caveman in another part of the caves, and they might not have liked them because maybe one of them ate what is it, Tyrannosaurus Rex, and the other one ate the saber-toothed tiger and everything. So they might not have even had discrimination based on color or skin tone. It might have been that I don't like what you eat.
That's a possibility. That is a possibility.
Yeah.
So Ukraine, over in Ukraine and Russia, do you, in your opinion, with Ukraine and Russia, with Israel and Pakistan, Benghazi, you know, all these different wars that are going on, do you believe America should be putting money into these wars? My opinion is they should be helping people find housing and taking care of the American people. I believe in a living wage.
I said that earlier, because I definitely think that we spend way too much money on the military, and this was even before the wars, because a lot of times we spend it on equipment and a number of other things as well, and I've got relatives that were in the military, and even they will say that we sometimes spend way too much. And so,
you just went mute, sir. You just went mute. Hello, you just went mute. All right, everyone, we lost Mr. Marcus Lee. I apologize for that, but I can no longer hear him. We're going to have him back another day. We've had an interesting conversation. I wish we could have finished the interview, but I no longer hear him. He's all sound. But thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. And hopefully another day this week or next week, we'll have Mr. Marcus Lee back on. Thank you for listening to Show Talk. And I apologize for the technical difficulties. Have a good day.